We're listening to you.
All right, Bruce, you guys are listening to me.
See, drug people.
If your gun is not locked appropriately, you are.
You need to do like video with kids.
Do we need a microphone?
You can hear me for
once. I know. 1, 2, 3, eyes on me.
They're so engaged.
Ready? You guys
They're
ready?
Still working.
You guys ready?
Yeah.
Okay. So what we're going to do now is we're going to do a report out. We're going to take the next about 15 minutes to report out. So we'll start with Group 1, Gun Safety and Violence Prevention. And then we'll, I'm sorry, Gun Safety and Injury Prevention. Mm-hmm. Then we'll go to Group 2 and then Group 3. And if you could just talk a little bit about your top priorities and maybe a little bit around why you chose those.
Okay.
And then also, what additional information that you think that would be helpful to help better vet what it is, you know, in your discussion if you came up with anything?
Okay. Well, we had actually the priorities we came up with, obviously, lockup program. Number 2 was safety education. 3 was suicide prevention. And the one that we decided was not a priority for us was ammunition disposal. First of all, why we didn't pick ammunition disposal is we didn't think it was really a Board of Health issue, really connected to people's health compared to the other topics we had to look at. And we also felt that with everything else going on, that it may not be something urgent that the Board of Health would be interested in. And there really isn't a lot of, you don't see it in the news about, hey, there's no place to take my ammunition, and you don't hear talk about it in newspapers and restaurants whenever in meetings. As opposed to, maybe a lockup program would be a good one. Well, we felt the reason it was is, hey, it's geared to prevent accidental shootings, especially in children. And it also is something that reduces medical costs in the community because you don't have the accidental shooting. And it doesn't, shootings in a family, whether it's family member on family member or a neighbor's kid, it does kind of destroy the fabric and relationships within the family and the neighborhood. So that's something that we thought is a reason why it was high on our list. We thought it was a very clear goal for the fact that, hey, okay, I know what the locking up programs are. Something could be accomplished. Is there political will? We thought there would be because we're not restricting people's right to possess guns. We're just staying in trying to educate them in certain circumstances, especially if you have children, you should have a lockup program. Now, you could have a lockup program on one scale or the other. You could make it where it's voluntary. Hey, this is a good idea to do, or in some states, you could say, we're gonna make it mandatory. If you have a gun, you have to have it locked in a safe somewhere. I don't know if there's political will to go that far, but somewhere on that spectrum, we've got to find where the sweet spot is that people buy into it. Is it an urgent topic nationally? We decided yes, it was, especially you have child deaths, and even you have domestic violence where if they didn't have immediate access to a gun, there may not have been a shooting because people get angry and do stupid things. And we also felt that there would be on a score of 2 for community support because it's not really restricted. It makes sense to keep guns away from children, and so that's why we picked that one. Safety education was another one. We felt that safety education went kind of hand in hand with locking up guns. It's, again, the reason for it is to reduce injury and deaths from accidental shootings. It's an easy program to develop because there's a lot of information out there to do that, and it's effective in the community, and you can get broad support presented in all kinds of different community venues. We thought, would members be willing to serve on a work group or task force? We felt it's pretty clear goals, it's a pretty cost-effective program to produce, and so we thought it would be. We also thought because of the high, you also always see these accidental shootings in the news, so with a lot of news coverage, there's always a lot of political, but then you have political support need to do something about that. So we thought that politically there would be will. Is it an urgent area? We decided yes, it was, because of what you see and hear about the troller getting a hold of guns and shooting another child. I can remember one where a sheriff's deputy had his gun in the off-duty gun in the back seat, put his kid in the car seat, and the child grabbed the gun and it fired, went through the driver's seat, paralyzed the officer. That stuff happens. I'm aware of two officers involved. Two officers that had children that were killed in their homes with other siblings or neighbors playing with guns, and that's just two in Clark County, so it is something that I'm aware of. And so we felt that was number two. And then number three was suicide prevention, and that's a national issue. Now, this is suicide prevention for adults. Suicide is a national issue, but we felt it was one of the things we needed to do. We need to have more data on, especially locally, what are gun deaths in this county, and how many of them are adults, and what kind of programs would be effective to combat that, because it's a broad topic, and you could get lost in the you know, it could be too overwhelming for people that have a lot of interest in that. There is a lot of media exposure, but we felt that most of the media exposure is for children, and because a lot of people, hey, we are a state that assisted suicide is legal in this state, so that's something you have to think about. And we also, as adults, feel that, hey, an adult can make a rational decision versus a child, and so that might be detrimental to suicide prevention in adults. And we didn't think it was as much of a priority as child suicide, and we felt that broad community support would probably be around a two, and we were being generous with a two. And so that's what we felt. And so for what additional information we needed, again, local data for gun deaths, you know, what's the demographics, child or adult, those kinds of things. Where was the gun? Was it laying around? Was it concealed but not secure? Those kinds of things. And then for lockup program safety education, where can we go? Gun clubs, NRA ranges, and maybe do a public-private partnership where they help provide the funding and we kind of push it out to the community. So that's what we did.
Okay.
So, thank you.
Thank you. Yeah. Awesome. Great job. Thank you.
Do you guys know what is in the works right now with the lockout program that is attached to a bill that's like kind of in the weeds that there's getting a lot of press? Like, I listened to NPR and there was like a big thing. Anybody else listen to that? Like, I listened to it twice because it was in the car. So I don't know if any. Did you listen to that?
No, I didn't hear that, but I saw.
Is it like 1361?
Yeah, I don't remember the number, but it was kind of the Seattle Times. I think their editorial board had people in. And to me, I didn't know what it was saying because it was like 30-some pages. And the other thing that bothered me was if I had a gun out and there was an accident, I could be held
liable
criminally. And then they were talking about people that feel they need a gun to buy a bedside for protection and all that. So, you know, one side of me, it sounds good, but I don't have all the details.
Yeah, I didn't either. That's why I was.
So that's where
I wanted to look it up before we had this conversation. But in that statement, it does require, and it's bump stock, and it has the allure of being, you know, bump stock, I think. But in there is quite a bit of legal implications for people that don't have their guns locked up, which I struggle with.
The bill may just have too much because if there's one or two
it's
things that
sounds
rubs,
very big.
You're wrong on yourself.
Do you guys know about that?
Was that do you know, was that national or was that state or
Washington
local?
State.
Yeah,
it was Washington State.
It's a Washington State.
1639.
This year for next
1639. Is it a House bill?
Yes.
It's House Bill 1639.
It's an initiative on the ballot.
The initiative. Okay.
And the rub was that the legislature had actually tried to change what the initiative was, and had come up with a second one that kind of defined things a little bit better. With the Washington Supreme Court said, no, you have to go with the first one, which has a lot of people concerned with the language because it's pretty
leading by 25 points in a poll.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean that's pretty new.
Exactly.
And just listening to that on the radio, it had one woman who was a proponent for having a gun right by her bedside so she could shoot up somebody who's going to come rob her. Which, and then I'm like, well, what about somebody your husband gets home and you think he's a robber and then you're like halfway asleep and you knock him in the head?
Yeah. Exactly.
Be quiet. And then there was another. So they were interviewed that gun safety proponent, and then they also interviewed a family whose son died from going to his buddy's house, whose grandfather had a gun, a little kid, and he got shot and killed. And so that family, of course, was, what a horrible tragedy to deal with. So anyways, it was interesting. I was like, that's kind of right, where we're talking.
Yep.
It's gonna be interesting when your insurance companies say, because they'll have the last word, if you have to have a, you have a state law where you're liable, where you have a secured right, you're gonna wonder if they're gonna have a rider on there, you have to pay a whole lot of money to own a gun. They're exposed to everything.
Yeah.
And the biggest issue I see here is the Department of Licensing will license the guns, and every year they have to check to make sure that somebody has, is still legally, legally able to have a gun, but then how do you go and take their guns away from them if they're not legally licensed anymore, so.
Right, right. Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
Awesome. All right, so group two, do you guys wanna go?
All right, well, we had the school health and safety, and the four categories that we had were the safe school facilities, the youth suicide prevention, trauma-informed policies, and anti-bullying policies. The one that we chose not to make a priority is actually the safe school facilities, and that was mostly because we think that's probably the school district's responsibility, and working with the school districts and the school resource officers, they're probably better suited to figure out what are some of the structural issues or things that go with the school facility as it relates to the structure itself. What we chose is the top, actually we had 1A and 1B, but there's 1 and 2 up here, was the trauma-informed policies. And the trauma-informed policies, we kind of looked more from the broader category or from the position of really being communication and making sure that as kids are exposed to traumatic events or traumatic things going on in their life, that there really needs to be communication going on and identification going on with the teachers, reporting from the students, make sure that school resource officers are involved, kind of that whole, do we know what's going on with this kid part? And if we have those policies in place, and we felt we ranked that threes all the way across, we think that that's a very important aspect for school safety. If we have those things in place, then maybe we know when bullying is occurring. And we know that bullying has been one of the causes associated with a lot of the school shootings, and it's usually been identified as an area of mass shooting. Somebody either feels bullied or ostracized. Mm-hmm. If they weren't out and out terrorists, then this is the other thing that sort of leads to those. So that's why we put them as 1A and 1B, really making sure that you have policies in place associated with, do we really know what's going on with the kids? Do we have things in place to make sure that we're identifying that and trying to mitigate it? And then the third one was the youth suicide prevention. And while we think it's important, it's actually one of the areas that we think that we need a little bit more data on. Actually, we probably don't have as good a data just related to suicides in general. And then on the youth suicide prevention, while the numbers are low, maybe our per capita is high. It'd be nice to just know a little bit more, how do we fit into it, and what is, how are they committing suicide, or the other parts, how many attempts are associated with the suicide before they actually are successful. Some of the more information that we would really like is more just kind of statistics around some of those things as it relates to suicide and attempted suicide. What resources are already in place and working on some of those things, particularly as it relates to mental health and the suicide. And then as it relates to the trauma-informed policies, it'd actually be nice to get some information from the schools as far as where do they see their gaps are, or what are some of the challenges that they face that public health may be able to step in and help them with, or what resources can we bring to bear. But both are priority ones and twos, got 15s across the board.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Great. Awesome. Thank you. Yay. All right. Group number three.
Our area was violence prevention, and the four areas we had were active active shooter mitigation planning, domestic violence education, ACEs education, and safe neighborhood development. So like the other groups, our bottom one, we'll start with the bottom ones, will be tied with the active shooting mitigation planning and the safe neighborhood development. And they were tied for the bottom, and they were actually very low priority for us. And part of that is because we really thought we needed more definition about the scope of what those meant. So what was the mitigation planning about? Was it about the mitigation of the active shooter, or is it mitigation planning to prevent active shooters? So we needed a little more scope and definition. And the same thing with safe neighborhood planning. Is it like planning for the safe neighborhoods? What's the interest there? What's the scope? So we struggled with the scope a little bit to be able to prioritize those a little higher. So our top two then were ACEs education and domestic violence education. So ACEs education we felt very strongly about. It's evidence-based, it's all about transitional. The community is starting to grasp it more as they're learning more about ACEs. And ACEs is something that the Public Health Advisory Group helped support from the beginning. And the community is sometimes a little ambivalent about what's really ACEs is and how it affects them or how they can be part of it. But as the education moves, it builds for a healthy community, and it really interfaces with a lot of things that go on in the communities, whether it's at school or community groups or in the political will or wherever. So ACEs really is something that covers a broad spectrum of the community and can affect all levels of health from a personal standpoint, clear up to affecting the health of the community. So we really felt this was a strong thing that we, in fact, would support. And we felt like there was going to be political will that's starting to grow already because of their education around that, but that's going to rise over time as well. This was closely followed by domestic violence education. Again, that kind of feeds into ACEs a little bit because we know that a lot of the statistics around the ACEs does affect domestic violence. So we really felt like there was evidence around transitional housing, around that population and so on, and that a lot of work is going on in the community with partners to try to prevent domestic violence, but also how that affects the health of the community is that in the family resource centers at the schools, for example, they're seeing children that are in homes with a lot of domestic violence and how that's affecting them as a child, as their education and their health. So domestic violence education really goes across the broad spectrum of the health of the community as well. So those were our highest two, and again, not having enough information about these bottom two. And let's see. Oh, yes, and then we also wanted some more data about domestic violence here locally, and then how that compares regionally or nationally. Like, is it men versus women? How much statistics are there on those? Children involved, locations, that sort of thing. What kind of domestic violence is it? Is it physical or emotional? So we'd like to see a little more data around that. Anything else?
Well, what did you guys think about this activity? Did it, I mean, initially I think we were like, oh, uber thrilled about having this discussion, but do you think in the end it was fruitful, it was helpful, you liked it? Okay.
Yeah, it's a really nice way to be able to think across the lines a little more generically, but also specifically to our role on FAC, but also thinking about the community. So I thought it was a very clear exercise.
Okay.
It was easy to do.
Good. Okay. So next steps, what we're going to do is we're going to take this information, both what you wrote on your flip charts as well as what you wrote on your scoring sheets. We're going to collate all that information, and then we're going to apply some additional, like I mentioned before, we'll apply some additional criteria to it. We're going to look at that data. We're going to look at where the missing information is, and then we're going to come back at our November meeting, and what we'll end up having is a prioritized list for you or another recommendations, and then from that, we'll further vet it down from here. And ideally, what we would like to, out of this conversation and the conversation that will happen in November, we'd like to come up with one or two topic areas that we're going to start with. Now, that doesn't mean that we can't address other topic areas as well going forward, but we really just wanted to start with, okay, what can we start tackling now, kind of a thing. So that's what we're going to do at our next meeting. So come prepared to come prepared with your thumb action to put those sticky dots on the, maybe do some thumb exercises before you come. And if you got, if there's anything else in the interim that you think about that you feel like is some additional information that we need to be able to gather, if you just want to email us, that would be fine. You can email me or email Lydia, and we can incorporate that into the discussion as well. But I really appreciate your engagement. This is really, really helpful for us. So we'll come back together again as a group. Just leave your stuff where it is. Leave your scoring sheet where it is, and then go ahead and come back.
Roxanne?
Yes.
Good job with you and your team.
Oh, they are, you know what, and I have to do a shout out. This was, Janice did a big part of this work, and Marissa's been involved, and Lydia's been involved, and it's been great. So
Good job. Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, I mean, thank you guys for that's a huge amount of work, and I think as you know, they've talked at the executive team quite a bit about this, and there is a lot more work that you know you guys did before even getting to this point. I do think that this can be a good template for us moving forward, so that we can have it be used for whatever topic. I mean, that's what my goal with this is kind of out of my wheelhouse of like going through processes. So it's like. You go with this and I'll go as long as you want to, but this is not obviously my forte, but I think, you know, just like criteria questions are really good questions for us to continue to ask ourselves of what we want to focus on as a group. And that's, I think, a big part of what I feel like is important, because as we move forward with any major topic that we find important for the community, these are going to always stay the same, or be, you know, yep, they're the big ones. So yep. It was a good process to go through. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. All right. So I think now we're going to, is it okay if I just keep going? So we're going to leave you kind of a quick timeline of what our upcoming calendar is going to be. So the nominating committee is going to gather on November 9th. And I think that, I have my notes. Who's on the nominating committee? Bob?
Steve.
And Remy?
Joe.
Who is it?
Steve, Bob, and Joe.
Okay. And they're meeting on November 9th. What they're going to do is they're going to come up with nominations, and then we're going to vote on those nominations in the January meeting. Is that right? Okay. November 27th is our next FAC meeting, and we'll go ahead and we'll see if we can invite Councillor Bolt, if he's going to be available, and then by that time we should know if there may be some other councillors that we might bring along as well, so we'll be taking care of that. We'll possibly be talking about budget at that time. I think by then we'll know a little bit about where we're landing on our budget. And then we'll do our activity like I had talked about before. There might be some more legislative information that we can be able to bring as well. So we'll plan that next meeting with the executive team. But it should be a really full and fun meeting. We're dark in December, so no meeting in December. And then in January 2019, we may be able to do budget again, depending on kind of where we are in November. And then at that meeting, we'll be sharing our priorities from our DOT exercise that we'll do in November. We'll also, we'll be voting on the slate of incoming executive members, but we'll possibly also be able to schedule a partner meeting. I don't know yet if we'll be able to do that or not. Sometimes January is a little tough, but that might be a possibility. Then February, that's when we're going to have our joint Board of Health meeting. So we had a work group that wanted to get together to help plan that, so we'll reconvene before that February meeting to plan that joint meeting. Possibly we could discuss our priority areas with the counselors if we're ready to go, which we should be by then. That might be, and get their input, that might be one thing that we might want to do, and how those fit with their priorities. So that might be an area, but we'll let the FAC task group work, or task force work on that. March is going to be some additional information gathering, partner presentations. We might have a FEPR update, a Public Health Emergency Response, Preparedness and Response Team update. We're going to be having a major exercise in May, so we wanted to share with you. It's just like an exercise for emergency preparedness. Then we'll continue to work on our work plan and do our assignments, but ideally by first part of the year, we want to make sure that we have our priorities set and some calendars and some ideas about what we're going to do moving forward with our priority areas that we've identified. We'll also continue to bring just normal public health topics to you as well. And as Joan mentioned, some things may bubble up that we want to go ahead and add, and we'll do that as well. But ideally what we're trying to do is plan out our calendar pretty far in advance so we can prepare and make sure that we have the information that, you guys are needing to make some of the decisions going forward. So we'll continue to work on the plan, but ideally by sometime in probably second quarter, we'll be doing some more activities around actually what our work plan is. So I think that's kind of the plan. Does that sound okay to everybody?
I think we can have the Kate Budd from the Council for the Homeless come sooner rather than later.
Okay.
To talk about the
yes, you emailed me on that, right?
Homeless action plan is going to the County Council for approval. This week.
She did a work session with them already.
Work session, but it's happening, and we really.
Okay.
Because it links to everything we talked about. You know, there's links in that report to everything we've talked about tonight. Not necessarily to be an advocacy topic, but for people to know, because it's the county's plan to end homelessness.
Okay.
It's a 5-year plan.
Okay.
And with recommendations. And Kate would like to kind of present that to us.
Okay. Okay. All righty. Anything else? Anybody else have any other?
I have another announcement.
Okay, so let's see.
Are we there yet?
I think we are. Are we there yet?
I think so.
Okay, do we have any other questions though on the calendar? Is there any? And we're good with that? Okay, yes, let's go ahead and move forward. I'm just going to.
November 14th, the day center opens on Grand Avenue. And it's an open house. City officials will be there about 4 o'clock, 4:30 to give. Opening remarks, etc. But the event goes from like 3:30 to 7. So if you're interested in seeing the new homeless day center, they're having tours, etc. It's on November 14th from like 3:30 to 7.
Where is that located? Do you know?
On Grand.
On Grand, you said that.
Yeah,
okay.
It's I don't know the address.
Okay, no worries.
I look at my calendar, but I can't pull my calendar.
That's okay.
Yeah. It's across from the Walmart.
Okay.
It used to be the Fred Meyer Home Improvement Center. It used to be the Fish and Wildlife Building. It's now the City of Vancouver Day Center.
Okay.
And so instead of the homeless clients going down to the Friends of the Carpenter Day Center, everything is being moved here.
Nice.
You know, with showers and restrooms. And
will they still have the Friends of the Carpenter?
Huh?
Will the Friends of the Carpenter still be available or no?
No.
This is going to be the new.
This is the replacement system.
So they'll have the lunches and the
food. The Friends of the Carpenter, the plan for the Friends of the Carpenter Day Center never fully got actualized because they ran into problems with egress for the water.
Mm-hmm.
So the showers and laundry facilities never were able to be put in there. So it was only sort of 40% of what it was intended to be. And it had to do with permitting of a running a line. So.
Yep.
So that they'll be using that space. Friends of the Carpenter has other plans for that space once the day center moves out. But it's a big boom for the city to deal with that. And then also the city is dealing with and being involved in the Council for the Homeless and also for the housing community, really working on what are we gonna do in our city and in our community about the tents and how that's impacting our neighborhoods and our people and our kids and our families. And what are we gonna what are we going to do until there's enough housing stock for people to move into? No solution at present, some things bubbling up. So.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Great.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other announcements or?
Ask a question.
Yes? Uh huh.
So is influenza hitting Clark County?
Not yet. And we do put out an influenza, we started our influenza reports. So we started last week was the first one, and I believe they're posted on the website.
Uh-huh. Yep.
And we can get you on the mailing list if you want, but they're also going to be on the website. And right now, an outbreak is considered when you're more than 10% of tests are positive, and we're down in like the 3% range. So it really hasn't started yet. We can't predict when it's going to start and how severe it is. I urge everybody to get their flu shot as soon as possible because it can take up to 2 weeks to build immunity, and we don't know for sure when it's going to hit. So I would do that sooner than later. Should protect you for the season. Yes.
I went and got my flu shot. It was kind of interesting because they told me that people over 65, which I'm just barely old, get an extra dose.
There is a higher dose available. It does. I think your antibody levels are supposedly higher with it, but there's no evidence that it is actually going to. It may or may not. If it doesn't hurt to get it, if it's available, sure, get it. But any flu shot is available, get it. Don't use that as a. If they don't have that one, get whatever they have because it's both work.
Is it more potent, or is there more?
Yeah, it's a higher dose. It's a Fluzone high dose variety.
Is
higher
a
dose.
A larger amount, or is it just?
I think there's a larger amount of antigen in it. Yeah. But and I think you get higher levels, but the data is not really out there as to whether it
must work because I can't remember the last time I was sick.
Well, stay away from the neonatal.
Well, you got the high dose one every year. Is that right?
Whatever it was, it works.
Yeah. Well,
it's the Alzheimer's.
You just can't remember anything, can you?
That's
well, you know,
that's
bliss right there.
Marla, you had something?
I just update from me, Consumer Public Health Services, but it relates to our community, and that is that probably many of you have heard about Daybreak Youth Services. It's had some pre-cup press, and I was recently asked if I would help. So I'm serving temporarily as an interim CEO while we work through some issues. And I did want to let people know there's a lot of rumors out there, so I'd like you to know that we're open for business. We actually have about 22 adolescents right now, providing really good care for them. And we're a bit at risk because we've lost some of our referral base, even though we probably have around half of the available beds, I believe, in Washington State. It's the first and only co-occurring residential facility. So if we go down, it's going to be a big loss to kids that need it. Mental health and substance use disorder. Dealing with both at the same time. So anyway, I would just encourage you to continue to support Daybreak as you may have in the past. And I'll try to keep you posted as things unfold. But I will be there for as long as 3 months. That means maybe sort of third week in December. And that's what I was able to commit to. And then hopefully by then we'll have things stabilized and moving forward. And I expect that we will. There's an incredibly dedicated staff there. And like I say, there's been some difficulties, but not ones that can't be overcome.
They're fortunate to have you as interim CEO.
Yeah.
And I didn't think retirement would last very long.
Well, I haven't completely gone back. I'll be heading to Tucson in January.
Yeah, okay.
He's thinking, we'll see about that. Yeah.
You know, it's on the record now. She's in Tucson in January. Let's see how that plays out.
These are recorded.
Part of the minutes, yeah.
Your husband can look online, look on the grid, and make sure that see what you said. See what you said.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Any more council member updates? All right. Jerry.
Thank you.